the bull sacrifice on the Chaturdashi day in accordance with the relevant Vedic injunctions. In ritual slaughter, offer the appropriate kinds of animals to the magnanimous Lord Shiva. Having thus commanded his ministers, Kamsa next called for Akura, the most eminent of the Yadus. Kamsa knew the art of securing personal advantage, and thus he took Akura's hand in his own and spoke to him as follows. My dear Akura, most charitable one, please do me a friendly favor out of respect. Among the Bhojas and Rishnis, there is no one else as kind to us as you. Gentle Akura, you always carry out your duties soberly, and therefore I am depending on you, just as powerful Indra took shelter of Lord Vishnu to achieve his goals. Please go to Nanda's village, where the two sons of Anakadundubi are living, and without delay bring them here on this chariot. The demigods, who are under the protection of Vishnu, have sent these two boys as my debt. Bring them here, and also have Nanda and the other coward men come with gifts of tribute. After you bring Krishna and Balaram, I will have them killed by my elephant, who is as powerful as death itself. And if by chance they escape from him, I will have them killed by my wrestlers, who are as strong as lightning. When these two have been killed, I will kill Vasudeva and all their lamenting relatives, the Vishnis, Bhojas, and the Shahas. I will also kill my old father, Ugrasen, who is greedy for my kingdom, and I will kill his brother, Devaka, and all my other enemies as well. Then, my friend, this earth will be free of thorns. My elder relative, Jarasandha, and my dear friend, Vivida, are solid well-wishers of mine, as are Shambhara, Naraka, and Bana. I will use them all to kill off those kings who are allied with the demigods, and then I will rule the earth. Now that you understand my intentions, please go at once and bring Krishna and Balaram to watch the bull sacrifice and see the opulence of the Yadu's capital. Sri Akura said, O King, you have expertly devised a process to free yourself of misfortune. Still, one should be equal in success and failure, since it is certainly destiny that produces the results of one's work. An ordinary person is determined to act on his desires, even when fate prevents their fulfillment. Therefore, he encounters both happiness and distress. Yet even though such is the case, I will execute your order. Shukadeva Goswami said, having thus instructed Akura, King Kamsa dismissed his ministers and retired to his quarters, and Akura returned home. Chapter 37, The Killing of the Demons Keshi and Vyoma. Shukadeva Goswami said, the demon Keshi, sent by Kamsa, appeared in Braja as a great horse. Running with the speed of the mind, he tore up the earth with his hooves. The hairs of his mane scattered the clouds and the demigods' airplanes throughout the sky, and he terrified everyone present with his loud neighing. When the Supreme Personality of Godhead saw how the demon was frightening his village of Gokula by neighing terribly and shaking the clouds with his tail, the Lord came forward to meet him. Keshi was searching for Krishna to fight, so when the Lord stood before him and challenged him to approach, the horse responded by roaring like a lion. Seeing the Lord standing before him, Keshi ran toward him in extreme rage, his mouth gaping as if to swallow up the sky. Rushing with furious speed, the unconquerable and unapproachable horse demon tried to strike the lotus-eyed Lord with his two front legs. But the transcendental Lord dodged Keshi's blow and then with his arms angrily seized the demon by the legs, whirled him around in the air, and contemptuously threw him the distance of 100 bow lengths, just as Garuda might throw a snake. Lord Krishna then stood there. Upon regaining consciousness, Keshi angrily got up, opened his mouth wide, and again rushed to attack Lord Krishna. But the Lord just smiled and thrust his left arm into the horse's mouth as easily as one would make a snake enter a hole in the ground. Keshi's teeth immediately fell out when they touched the Supreme Lord's arm, which to the demon felt as hot as molten iron. Within Keshi's body, the Supreme Personality's arm then expanded greatly, like a diseased stomach swelling because of neglect. As Lord Krishna's expanding arm completely blocked Keshi's breathing, his legs kicked convulsively, his body became covered with sweat, and his eyes rolled around. The demon then passed stool and fell on the ground, dead. mighty arm Krishna withdrew his arm from Keshi's body, which now appeared like a long Karkatika fruit. Without the least display of pride at having so effortlessly killed his enemy, the Lord accepted the demigod's worship in the form of flowers rained down from above. My dear King, thereafter, Lord Krishna was approached in a solitary place by the great sage among the demigods, Narada Muni. That most exalted devotee spoke as follows to the Lord, who effortlessly performs his pastimes. O Krishna, Krishna, unlimited Lord, source of all mystic power, Lord of the universe, O Vasudev, shelter of all beings and best of the Yadus, O Master, you are the supreme soul of all created beings, sitting unseen within the cave of the heart, like the fire dormant within kindling wood. You are the witness within everyone, the supreme personality and the ultimate controlling deity. You are the shelter of all souls, and being the supreme controller, you fulfill your desires simply by your will. By your personal creative potency, you manifested in the beginning the primal modes of material nature, and through their agency you create, maintain, and then destroy this universe. You, that very same creator, have now descended on the earth to annihilate the Daitya, Pramata, and Rakshasa demons who are posing as kings, and also to protect the godly. The horse demon was so terrifying that his name frightened the demigods into leaving their heavenly kingdom. But by our good fortune, you have enjoyed the sport of killing him. In just 2 days, O Almighty Lord, I will see the deaths of Chanura, Mushtika, and other wrestlers, along with those of the elephant Kuvalyapida and King Kamsa, all by your hand. Then I will see you kill Kali Yavana, Mura, Naraka, and the conch demon. And I will also see you steal the Parijapa flower and defeat Indra. I will then see you marry many daughters of heroic kings after paying for them with your valor. Then, O Lord of the universe, in Dwarka you will deliver King Riga from a curse and take for yourself the Samantika jewel together with another wife. You will bring back a Brahmin's dead son from the abode of your servant Yamaraj, and thereafter you will kill Pondraka, burn down the city of Kashi, and annihilate Dantavakra and the king of Chedi during the great Rajasuya sacrifice. I shall see all these heroic pastimes, along with many others you will perform during your residence in Dwarka. These pastimes are glorified on this earth in the songs of transcendental poets. Subsequently, I will see you appear as time personified, serving as Arjuna's chariot driver and destroying entire armies of soldiers to rid the earth of her burden. Let us approach you, the supreme personality of Godhead, for shelter. You are full of perfectly pure spiritual awareness and are always situated in your original identity. Since your will is never thwarted, you have already achieved all possible desirable things, and by the power of your spiritual energy, you remain eternally aloof from the flow of the qualities of illusion. I bow down to you, the supreme controller, who are dependent only on yourself. By your potency, you have constructed the unlimited particular arrangements of this universe. Now you have appeared as the greatest hero among the Yadus, Vrishnis, and Sapitas, and have chosen to participate in human warfare. Shukadeva Goswami said, having thus addressed Lord Krishna, the chief of the Yadu dynasty, Narada bowed down and offered him obeisances. Then that great sage and most eminent devotee took his leave from the Lord and went away, feeling great joy at having directly seen him. After killing the demon Keshi in battle, Lord Krishna continued to tend the cows and other animals in the company of his joyful cowherd boyfriends. Thus he brought happiness to all the residents of Vrindavan. One day, the cowherd boys, while grazing their animals on the mountain slopes, played the game of stealing and hiding, acting out the roles of rival thieves and herders. In that game, some acted as thieves, others as shepherds, and others as sheep. They played their game happily without fear of danger. A powerful magician named Vyoma, son of the demon Maya, then appeared on the scene in the guise of a cowherd boy. Pretending to join the game as a thief, he proceeded to steal most of the cowherd boys who were acting as sheep. Gradually, the great demon abducted more and more of the cowherd boys and cast them into a mountain cave, which he sealed with a boulder. Finally, only 4 or 5 boys acting as sheep remained in the game. Lord Krishna, who shelters all saintly devotees, understood perfectly well what Vyomasura was doing. Just as a lion grabs a wolf, Krishna forcefully seized the demon as he was taking away more cowherd boys. The demon changed into his original form, as big and powerful as a great mountain. But try as he might to free himself, he could not do so, having lost his strength from being held in the Lord's tight grip. Lord Achyuta clutched Vyomasura between his arms and threw him to the ground. Then, while the demigods in heaven looked on, Krishna killed him in the same way that one kills a sacrificial animal. Krishna then smashed the boulder blocking the cave's entrance and led the trapped cowherd boys to safety. Thereafter, as the demigods and cowherd boys sang his glories, he returned to his cowherd village, Gokula. Chapter 38, Akura's Arrival in Vrindavan. Shukadeva Goswami said, after passing the night in the city of Mathura, the high-minded Akura mounted his chariot and set off for the cowherd village of Nanda Maharaj. As he traveled on the road, the great soul Akura felt tremendous devotion for the lotus-eyed personality of Godhead, and thus he began to consider as follows. What pious deeds have I done? What severe austerities undergone? What worship performed or charity given, so that today I will see Lord Keshava? Since I am a materialistic person absorbed simply in sense gratification, I think it is as difficult for me to have gotten this opportunity to see Lord Uttamashloka as it would be for one born a Shudra to be allowed to recite the Vedic mantras. But enough of such talk. After all, even a fallen soul like me can have the chance to behold the infallible Supreme Lord, for one of the conditioned souls being swept along in the river of time may sometimes reach the shore. Today all my sinful reactions have been eradicated and my birth has become worthwhile, since I will offer my obeisances to the Supreme Lord's lotus feet, which mystic yogis meditate upon. Indeed, today King Kamsa has shown me extreme mercy by sending me to see the lotus feet of Lord Hari, who has now appeared in this world. Simply by the effulgence of his toenails, many souls in the past have transcended the insurmountable darkness of material existence and achieved liberation. Those lotus feet are worshipped by Brahma, Shiva, and all the other demigods, by the goddess of fortune, and also by the great sages and Vaishnavas. Upon those lotus feet the Lord walks about the forest while herding the cows with his companions, and those feet are smeared with the kumkum from the gopis' breasts. Surely I shall see the face of Lord Mukunda, since the deer are now walking past me on my right. That face, framed by his curly hair, is beautified by his attractive cheeks and nose, his smiling glances, and his reddish lotus eyes. I am going to see the Supreme Lord Vishnu, the reservoir of all beauty, who by his own sweet will has now assumed a human-like form to relieve the earth of her burden. Thus there is no denying that my eyes will achieve the perfection of their existence. He is the witness of material cause and effect, yet he is always free from false identification with them. By his internal potency he dispels the darkness of separation and confusion. The individual souls in this world, who are manifested here when he glances upon his material creative energy, indirectly perceive him in the activities of their life airs, senses, and intelligence. All sins are destroyed and all good fortune is created by the Supreme Lord's qualities, activities, and appearances, and words that describe them animate, beautify, and purify the world. On the other hand, words bereft of his glories are like the decorations on a corpse. That same Supreme Lord has descended into the dynasty of the Satvatis to delight the exalted demigods, who maintain the principles of religion he has created. Residing in Vrindavan, he spreads his fame, which the demigods glorify in song, and which brings auspiciousness to all. Today I shall certainly see him, the goal and spiritual master of the great souls. Seeing him brings jubilation to all who have eyes, for he is the true beauty of the universe. Indeed, his personal form is the shelter desired by the goddess of fortune. Now all the dawns of my life have become auspicious. Then I will at once alight from my chariot and bow down to the lotus feet of Krishna and Balaram, the supreme personalities of Godhead. Theirs are the same feet that great mystic yogis striving for self-realization bear within their minds. I will also offer my obeisances to the Lord's cowherd boyfriends and to all the other residents of Vrindavan. And when I have fallen at his feet, the Almighty Lord will place his lotus hand upon my head. for those who seek shelter in him because they are greatly disturbed by the powerful serpent of time, that hand removes all fear. By offering charity to that lotus hand, Purandara and Bali earned the status of Indra, king of heaven. And during the pleasure pastimes of the rasa dance, when the Lord wiped away the gopis' perspiration and removed their fatigue, the touch of their faces made that hand as fragrant as a sweet flower. The infallible Lord will not consider me an enemy, even though Kamsa has sent me here as his messenger. After all, the omniscient Lord is the actual knower of the field of this material body, and with his perfect vision he witnesses, both externally and internally, all the endeavors of the conditioned soul's heart. Thus he will cast his smiling, affectionate glance upon me as I remain fixed with joined palms, fallen in obeisances at his feet. Then all my contamination will at once be dispelled, and I will give up all doubts and feel the most intense bliss. Recognizing me as an intimate friend and relative, Krishna will embrace me with his mighty arms, instantly sanctifying my body and diminishing to nil all my material bondage, which is due to fruitive activities. Having been embraced by the all-famous Lord Krishna, I will humbly stand before him with bowed head and joined palms, and he will address me, "My dear Akura." At that very moment, my life's purpose will be fulfilled. Indeed, the life of anyone whom the Supreme Personality fails to recognize is simply pitiable. The Supreme Lord has no favorite and no dearmost friend, nor does he consider anyone undesirable, despicable, or fit to be neglected. All the same, he lovingly reciprocates with his devotees in whatever manner they worship him, just as the trees of heaven fulfill the desires of whoever approaches them. And then Lord Krishna's elder brother, the foremost of the Yadus, will grasp my joined hands while I am still standing with my head bowed, and after embracing me, he will take me to his house. There he will honor me with all items of ritual welcome and inquire from me about how Kamsa has been treating his family members. Shukadeva Goswami continued, "My dear king, while the son of Shrapalka, traveling on the road, thus meditated deeply on Sri Krishna, he reached Gokula as the sun was beginning to set. In the cowherd pasture, Akura saw the footprints of those feet whose pure dust the rulers of all the planets in the universe hold on their crowns. Those footprints of the Lord, distinguished by such marks as the lotus, barley corn, and elephant goad, made the ground wonderfully beautiful. Increasingly agitated by ecstasy at seeing the Lord's footprints, his bodily hair standing on end because of his pure love, and his eyes filled with tears, Akura jumped down from his chariot and began rolling about among those footprints, exclaiming, 'Ah, this is the dust for my master's feet!' The very goal of life for all embodied beings is this ecstasy, which Akura experienced when, upon receiving Kamsa's order, he put aside all pride, fear, and lamentation, and absorbed himself in seeing, hearing, and describing the things that reminded him of Lord Krishna. Akura then saw Krishna and Balaram in the village of Braja, going to milk the cows. Krishna wore yellow garments, Balaram blue, and their eyes resembled autumnal lotuses. One of those two mighty armed youths, the shelters of the goddess of fortune, had a dark blue complexion, and the others was white. With their fine-featured faces, they were the most beautiful of all persons. As they walked with the gait of young elephants, glancing about with compassionate smiles, those two exalted personalities beautified the cow pasture with the impressions of their feet, which bore the marks of the flag, lightning bolt, elephant goad, and lotus. The two lords, whose pastimes are most magnanimous and attractive, were ornamented with jeweled necklaces and flower garlands, anointed with auspicious fragrant substances, freshly bathed, and dressed in spotless raiment. They were the primeval supreme personalities, the masters and original causes of the universe, who had, for the welfare of the earth, now descended in their distinct forms of Keshava and Balaram. O King Parikshit, they resembled two gold-bedecked mountains, one of emerald and the other of silver, as with their effulgence they dispelled disguised darkness in all directions. Akura, overwhelmed with affection, quickly jumped down from his chariot and fell at the feet of Krishna and Balaram like a rod. The joy of seeing the Supreme Lord flooded Akura's eyes with tears and decorated his limbs with eruptions of ecstasy. He felt such eagerness that he could not speak to present himself, O King. Recognizing Akura, Lord Krishna drew him close with his hand, which bears the sign of the chariot wheel, and then embraced him. Krishna felt pleased, for he is always benignly disposed toward his surrendered devotees. As Akura stood with his head bowed, Lord Balaram grasped his joined hands, and then he took him to his house in the company of Lord Krishna. After inquiring from Akura whether his trip had been comfortable, Balaram offered him a first-class seat, bathed his feet in accordance with the injunctions of scripture, and respectfully served him milk with honey. The almighty Lord Balaram presented Akura with the gift of a cow, massaged his feet to relieve him of fatigue, and then with great respect and faith, fed him suitably prepared food of various fine tastes. When Akura had eaten to his satisfaction, Lord Balaram, the supreme knower of religious duties, offered him aromatic herbs for sweetening his mouth, along with fragrances and flower garlands. Thus Akura once again enjoyed the highest pleasure. Nanda Maharaj asked Akura, "O descendant of the Shaha, how are all of you maintaining yourselves while that merciless Kamsa remains alive? You are just like sheep under the care of a butcher. That cruel, self-serving Kamsa murdered the infants of his own sister in her presence, even as she cried in anguish. So why should we even ask about the well-being of you, his subjects?" Honored by Nanda Maharaj with these true and pleasing words of inquiry, Akura forgot the fatigue of his journey. Chapter 39, Akura's Vision. Shukadeva Goswami said, "Having been honored so much by Lord Balaram and Lord Krishna, Akura, seated comfortably on a couch, felt that all the desires he had contemplated on the road were now fulfilled. My dear King, what is unattainable for one who has satisfied the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the shelter of the Goddess of Fortune? Even so, those who are dedicated to his devotional service never want anything from him." After the evening meal, Lord Krishna asked Akura how Kamsa was treating their dear relatives and friends, and what the king was planning to do. The Supreme Lord said, "My dear gentle uncle Akura, was your trip here comfortable? May all good fortune be yours. Are our well-wishing friends and our relatives, both close and distant, happy and in good health? But, my dear Akura, as long as King Kamsa, that disease of our family who goes by the name maternal uncle, is still prospering, why should I even bother to ask about the well-being of our family members and his other subjects? Just see how much suffering I have caused my offenseless parents. Because of me, their sons were killed and they themselves imprisoned. By good fortune, we have today fulfilled our desire to see you, our dear relative. Oh, gentle uncle, please tell us why you have come." Shukadeva Goswami said, "In response to the Supreme Lord's request, Akura described the whole situation, including King Kamsa's enmity toward the Yadus and his attempt to murder Vasudeva. Akura relayed the message he had been sent to deliver. He also described Kamsa's real intentions and how Narada had informed Kamsa that Krishna had been born as the son of Vasudeva. Lord Krishna and Lord Balaram laughed when they heard Akura's words. The lords then informed their father, Nanda, of King Kamsa's orders. Nanda Maharaj then issued orders to the coward men by having the village constable make the following announcement throughout Nanda's domain of Braja. Go collect all the available milk products. Bring valuable gifts and yoke your wagons. Tomorrow we shall go to Mathura, present our milk products to the king, and see a very great festival. The residents of all the outlying districts are also going." When the young gopis heard that Akura had come to Braja to take Krishna and Balaram to the city, they became extremely distressed. Some gopis felt so pained at heart that their faces turned pale from their heavy breathing. Others were so anguished that their dresses, bracelets, and braids came loose. Other gopis entirely stopped their sensory activities and became fixed in meditation on Krishna. They lost all awareness of the external world, just like those who attain the platform of self-realization. And still other young women fainted simply by remembering the words of Lord Krishna. These words, decorated with wonderful phrases and expressed with affectionate smiles, would deeply touch the young girls' hearts. The gopis were frightened at the prospect of even the briefest separation from Lord Mukunda. So now, as they remembered his graceful gait, his pastimes, his affectionate smiling glances, his heroic deeds and his joking words, which would relieve their distress, they were beside themselves with anxiety at the thought of the great separation about to come. They gathered in groups and spoke to one another, their faces covered with tears and their minds fully absorbed in Achyuta.
Shri Gopya Uchu Mahavadatastavana Prachindaya Sangyoja Maitra Panahin Dehino Tam Chakatatan Vyunang Shapatikam Vikriditam Te Bhakachestitam Yata Yastram Vadashyasata Kundalavratam Mukunda Vatram Sukapola Munasam Shokapa Nodas Mitalesh Sundaram Karoshi Parukshima Saru Te Kritam Krurastama Krurasamakyasmanash Chakshuhi Dattam Harase Patagyavat Yenaika Deshe Kilasarga Sarshtavam Tadiya Mandrakshma Vahyam Madhudvijo.
The gopis said, O Providence, you have no mercy. You bring embodied creatures together in friendship and love, and then senselessly separate them before they fulfill their desires. This whimsical play of yours is like a child's game. Having shown us Mukunda's face, framed by dark locks and beautified by his fine cheeks, raised nose and gentle smiles, which eradicate all misery, you are now making that face invisible. This behavior of yours is not at all good. O Providence, though you come here with the name Akura, you are indeed cruel, for like a fool you are taking away what you once gave us, those eyes with which we have seen, even in one feature of Lord Madhudvisha's form, the perfection of your entire creation. Alas, Nanda's son, who breaks loving friendships in a second, will not even look directly at us. Forcibly brought under his control, we abandoned our homes, relatives, children, and husbands just to serve him, but he is always looking for new lovers. The dawn following this night will certainly be auspicious for the women of Mathura. All their hopes will now be fulfilled, for as the Lord of Braja enters their city, they will be able to drink from his face the nectar of the smile emanating from the corners of his eyes. O gopis, although our Mukunda is intelligent and very obedient to his parents, once he has fallen under the spell of the honey-sweet words of the women of Mathura and been enchanted by their alluring, shy smiles, how will he ever return to us unsophisticated village girls? When the Dasharas, Bhojas, Andakas, Rishnis, and Satpatas see the son of Devaki in Mathura, they will certainly enjoy a great festival for their eyes, as will all those who see him traveling along the road to the city. After all, he is the darling of the goddess of fortune and the reservoir of all transcendental qualities. He who is doing this merciless deed should not be called Akura. He is so extremely cruel that without even trying to console the sorrowful residents of Braja, he is taking away Krishna, who is more dear to us than life itself. Hard-hearted Krishna has already mounted the chariot, and now the foolish cowherds are hurrying after him in their bullock carts. Even the elders are saying nothing to stop him. Today fate is working against us. Let us directly approach Madhava and stop him from going. What can our family elders and other relatives do to us? Now that fate is separating us from Mukunda, our hearts are already wretched, for we cannot bear to give up his association even for a fraction of a second. When he brought us to the assembly of the Rasa Dance, where we enjoyed his affectionate and charming smiles, his delightful secret talks, his playful glances, and his embraces, we passed many nights as if they were a single moment. O gopis, how can we possibly cross over the insurmountable darkness of his absence? How can we exist without Ananta's friend Krishna, who in the evening would return to Braja in the company of the cowherd boys, his hair and garland powdered with the dust raised by the cow's hooves? As he played his flute, he would captivate our minds with his smiling, sidelong glances. Shukadeva Goswami said, after speaking these words, the ladies of Braja, who were so attached to Krishna, felt extremely agitated by their imminent separation from him. They forgot all shame and loudly cried out, O Govinda! O Damodar! O Madhava! But even as the gopis cried out in this way, Akura, having at sunrise performed his morning worship and other duties, began to drive the chariot. Led by Nanda Maharaj, the cowherd men followed behind Lord Krishna in their wagons. The men brought along many offerings for the king, including clay pots filled with ghee and other milk products. With his glances, Lord Krishna somewhat pacified the gopis, and they also followed behind for some time. Then, hoping he would give them some instruction, they stood still. As he departed, that best of the Yadus saw how the gopis were lamenting, and thus he consoled them by sending a messenger with this loving promise, "I will return." Sending their minds after Krishna, the gopis stood as motionless as figures in a painting. They remained there as long as the flag atop the chariot was visible, and even until they could no longer see the dust raised by the chariot wheels. The gopis then turned back, without hope that Govinda would ever return to them. Full of sorrow, they began to spend their days and nights chanting about the pastimes of their beloved. My dear King, the Supreme Lord Krishna, traveling as swiftly as the wind in that chariot with Lord Balaram and Akura, arrived at the river Kalindi, which destroys all sins. The river's sweet water was more effulgent than brilliant jewels. After Lord Krishna had touched it for purification, he drank some from his hand. Then he had the chariot moved near a grove of trees and climbed back on, along with Balaram. Akura asked the two lords to take their seats on the chariot. Then, taking their permission, he went to a pool in the Yamuna and took his bath as enjoined in the scriptures. While immersing himself in the water and reciting eternal mantras from the Vedas, Akura suddenly saw Balaram and Krishna before him. Akura thought, "How can the two sons of Anakadundubi, who are sitting in the chariot, be standing here in the water? They must have left the chariot." But when he came out of the river, there they were on the chariot just as before. Asking himself, "Was the vision I had of them in the water an illusion?" Akura re-entered the pool. There, Akura now saw Anantashesha, the lord of the serpents, receiving praise from siddhas, charanas, gandharvas, and demons, who all had their heads bowed. The personality of Godhead whom Akura saw had thousands of heads, thousands of hoods, and thousands of helmets. His blue garment and his fair complexion, as white as the filaments of a lotus stem, made him appear like white Kailas mountain with its many peaks. Akura then saw the Supreme Personality of Godhead lying peacefully on the lap of Lord Anantashesha. The complexion of that Supreme Person was like a dark blue cloud. He wore yellow garments and had four arms and reddish lotus petal eyes. His face looked attractive and cheerful with its smiling, endearing glance and lovely eyebrows, its raised nose and finely formed ears, and its beautiful cheeks and reddish lips. The Lord's broad shoulders and expansive chest were beautiful, and his arms long and stout. His neck resembled the conch shell, his navel was deep, and his abdomen bore lines like those on a banyan leaf. He had large loins and hips, thighs like an elephant's trunk, and shapely knees and shanks. His raised ankles reflected the brilliant effulgence emanating from the nails on his petal-like toes, which beautified his lotus feet. Adorned with a helmet, bracelets, and armlets, which were all bedecked with many priceless jewels, and also with a belt, a sacred thread, necklaces, ankle bells, and earrings, the Lord shone with dazzling effulgence. In one hand he held a lotus flower, in the others a conch shell, discus, and club. Gracing his chest with a Shivat's mark, the brilliant Kaustubha gem, and a flower garland. Encircling the Lord and worshipping him were Nanda, Sunanda, and his other personal attendants, Sanaka and the other Kumaras, Brahma, Rudra, and other chief demigods, the nine chief Brahmins, and the best of the saintly devotees, headed by Prahlad, Narada, and Upanishad Vasu. Each of these great personalities was worshipping the Lord by chanting sanctified words of praise in his own unique mood. Also in attendance were the Lord's principal internal potencies, Sri, Pushti, Gir, Kanti, Kirti, Tushti, Ila, and Urja, as were his material potencies, Vidya, Avidya, and Maya, and his internal pleasure potency, Shakti. As the great devotee Akura beheld all this, he became extremely pleased and felt enthused with transcendental devotion. His intense ecstasy caused his bodily hairs to stand on end and tears to flow from his eyes, drenching his entire body. Somehow managing to steady himself, Akura bowed his head to the ground. Then he joined his palms in supplication and, in a voice choked with emotion, very slowly and attentively began to pray. Chapter 40, The Prayers of Akura. श्रीयक्रूरोवाच नतोऽस्म्यहं त्वा किल हेतुहेतुम् नारायणम् पूरसमाजमव्ययम् नन्नाभिजाता तदविन्दकोशात् ब्रह्माविरासीजत एष लोक भूस्तोऽयमग्नि पवनम् कमादि महानजादि मन इन्द्रियाणि सर्वेन्द्रियाथा बुधाश्च सर्वे हेतवस्ते जगतोऽङ्गभूता नायते स्वरूपम् विदुरात्मनस्ति यजादयो नापतया गृहीता अजोनबद्ध सगुणरजाया गुणात्परम् वेद न ते स्वरूपम् Shriyakura said, I bow down to you, the cause of all causes, the original and inexhaustible Supreme Person, Narayan. From the whirl of the lotus born from your navel, Brahma appeared, and by his agency this universe has come into being. Earth, water, fire, air, ether and its source, false ego. The Mahatattva, the total material nature and her source, the Supreme Lord's Purusha expansion. The mind, the senses, the sense objects, and the senses presiding deities, all these causes of the cosmic manifestation are born from your transcendental body. The total material nature and these other elements of creation certainly cannot know you as you are, for they are manifested in the realm of dull matter. Since you are beyond the modes of nature, even Lord Brahma, who is bound up in these modes, does not know your true identity. Pure yogis worship you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by conceiving of you in the threefold form comprising the living entities, the material elements that constitute the living entities' bodies, and the controlling deities of those elements. Brahmins who follow the regulations concerning the three sacred fires worship you by chanting mantras from the three Vedas and performing elaborate fire sacrifices for the various demigods who have many forms and names. In pursuit of spiritual knowledge, some persons renounce all material activities and, having thus become peaceful, perform the sacrifice of philosophic investigation to worship you, the original form of all knowledge. And yet others, those whose intelligence is pure, follow the injunctions of Vaishnava scriptures promulgated by you. Absorbing their minds in thought of you, they worship you as the one Supreme Lord manifesting in multiple forms. There are still others who worship you, the Supreme Lord, in the form of Lord Shiva. They follow the path described by him and interpreted in various ways by many teachers. But all these people, my Lord, even those who have turned their attention away from you and are worshipping other deities, are actually worshipping you alone, O embodiment of all the demigods. As rivers born from the mountains and filled by the rain flow from all sides into the sea, so do all these paths in the end reach you, O Master. Goodness, passion, and ignorance, the qualities of your material nature, entangle all conditioned living beings, from Brahma down to the non-moving creatures. I offer my obeisances to you, who as the supreme soul of all beings witness everyone's consciousness with unbiased vision. The current of your material modes, produced by the force of ignorance, flows strongly among the living beings who assume identities as demigods, humans, and animals. Fire is said to be your face, the earth your feet, the sun your eye, and the sky your navel. The directions are your sense of hearing, the chief demigods your arms, and the oceans your abdomen. Heaven is thought to be your head, and the wind your vital air and physical strength. The trees and plants are the hairs on your body, the clouds the hair on your head, and the mountains, the bones and nails of you, the Supreme. The passage of day and night is the blinking of your eyes, the progenitor of mankind, your genitals, and the rain, your semen. All the worlds with their presiding demigods and teeming populations originate in you, the inexhaustible Supreme Personality of Godhead. These worlds travel within you, the basis of the mind and senses, just as aquatics swim in the sea, or tiny insects burrow within an udumbra fruit. To enjoy your pastimes, you manifest yourself in various forms in this material world, and these incarnations cleanse away all the unhappiness of those who joyfully chant your glories. I offer my obeisances to you, the cause of the creation, Lord Matsya, who swam about in the ocean of dissolution, to Lord Hayagriva, the killer of Madhu and Kaitava, to the immense tortoise, Lord Kuma, who supported Mandara Mountain, and to the boar incarnation, Lord Varaha, who enjoyed lifting the earth. Obeisances to you, the amazing lion, Lord Nrsimha, who removed your saintly devotee's fear, and to the dwarf, Vamana, who stepped over the three worlds. Obeisances to you, Lord of the Bhrigus, who cut down the forest of the conceited royal order, and to Lord Rama, the best of the Raghu dynasty, who put an end to the demon Ravana. Obeisances to you, Lord of the Satpatas, and to your forms of Vasudev, Sankarshan, Pradyumna, and Aniruddha. Obeisances to your form as the faultless Lord Buddha, who will bewilder the Daityas and Danavas, and to Lord Kalki, the annihilator of the meat-eaters posing as kings. O Supreme Lord, the living entities in this world are bewildered by your illusory energy. Becoming involved in the false concepts of I and my, they are forced to wander along the paths of fruitive work. I too am deluded in this way, O Almighty Lord, foolishly thinking my body, children, home, wife, money and followers to be real, though they are actually as unreal as a dream. Thus mistaking the temporary for the eternal, my body for myself, and sources of misery for sources of happiness, I have tried to take pleasure in material dualities. Covered in this way by ignorance, I could not recognize you as the real object of my love. Just as a fool overlooks a body of water covered by the vegetation growing in it and chases a mirage, so I have turned away from you. My intelligence is so crippled that I cannot find the strength to curb my mind, which is disturbed by material desires and activities and constantly dragged here and there by my obstinate senses. Being thus fallen, I am approaching your feet for shelter, O Lord, because although the impure can never attain your feet, I think it is nevertheless possible by your mercy. Only when one's material life has ceased, O Lotus Navel Lord, can one develop consciousness of you by serving your pure devotees. Obeisances to the Supreme Absolute Truth, the possessor of unlimited energies. He is the embodiment of pure transcendental knowledge, the source of all kinds of awareness, and the predominator of the forces of nature that rule over the living being. O Son of Vasudev, obeisances to you, within whom all living beings reside. O Lord of the mind and senses, again I offer you my obeisances. O Master, please protect me, who am surrendered unto you. Chapter 41. Krishna and Balaram enter Mathura. Shukadeva Goswami said, while Akrura was still offering prayers, the Supreme Lord Krishna withdrew his form that he had revealed in the water, just as an actor winds up his performance. When Akrura saw the vision disappear, he came out of the water and quickly finished his various ritual duties. He then returned to the chariot, astonished. Lord Krishna asked Akrura, have you seen something wonderful on the earth, in the sky, or in the water? From your appearance, we think you have. Sri Akrura said, whatever wonderful things the earth, sky, or water contain, all exist in you. Since you encompass everything, when I am seeing you, what have I not seen? And now that I am seeing you, O Supreme Absolute Truth, in whom reside all amazing things on the earth, in the sky, and in the water, what amazing things could I see in this world? With these words, Akrura, the son of Gandhani, began driving the chariot onward. At the end of the day, he arrived in Mathura with Lord Balaram and Lord Krishna. Wherever they passed along the road, the village people came forward and looked upon the two sons of Vasudev with great pleasure. In fact, the villagers could not withdraw their eyes from them. Nanda Maharaj and the other residents of Vrindavan, having reached Mathura ahead of the chariot, had stopped at a garden on the outskirts of the city to wait for Krishna and Balaram. After joining Nanda and the others, the Supreme Lord Krishna, the controller of the universe, took humble Akrura's hand in his own and, smiling, spoke as follows. Take the chariot and enter the city ahead of us, then go home. After resting here a while, we will go to see the city. Akrura said, O Master, without the two of you, I shall not enter Mathura. I am your devotee, O Lord, so it is not fair for you to abandon me, since you are always affectionate to your devotees. Come, let us go to my house with your elder brother, the coward men, and your companions. O best of friends, O transcendental Lord, in this way please grace my house with its master. I am simply an ordinary householder attached to ritual sacrifices, So please purify my home with the dust of your lotus feet. By that act of purification, my forefathers, the sacrificial fires, and the demigods will all become satisfied. By bathing your feet, the exalted Bali Maharaj attained not only glorious fame and unequal power, but also the final destination of pure devotees. The water of the river Ganga has purified the three worlds, having become transcendental by bathing your feet. Lord Shiva accepted that water on his head, and by that water's grace, the sons of King Sagara attained to heaven. O Lord of Lords, Master of the Universe, O you whose glories it is most pious to hear and chant, O best of the Yadus, O you whose fame is recounted in excellent poetry, O Supreme Lord Narayan, I offer you my obeisances. The Supreme Lord said, I will come to your house with my elder brother, but first I must satisfy my friends and well-wishers by killing the enemy of the Yadu clan. Shukadeva Goswami said, thus addressed by the Lord, Akrura entered the city with a heavy heart. He informed King Kamsa of the success of his mission and then went home.